Hello, this is Judy, and for the next hour, I will be reading from the Toronto Star edition of October 6, 2025, on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. I will do my best to pronounce all names correctly, and if I don't, please excuse me. So, the first article I will be reading is the Carney government will start tabling budgets in the fall instead of the spring. Other changes include showing the split between operational and capital spending and balancing the operational budget over the next 3 years. And then there's a photo of Prime Minister Mark Carney's government. Underneath it says, Prime Minister Mark Carney's government plans to split the budget document into baskets of spending and revenue to separate spending deemed to be for capital investment from operational spending. And this photo is by Adrian Wild, WYLD, of the Canadian Press. And the article I'm reading is written by Alex Ballingall, Ballingall, and he is a deputy Ottawa bureau chief. Ottawa. Prime Minister Mark Carney is closing the book on the era of spring budgets for the federal government, which will present its annual spending plans every fall going forward, officials announced Monday. On top of flipping the federal budgetary calendar, officials outlined some details of how the Carney government plans to split the document into baskets of spending and revenue to separate spending deemed to be for capital investment from operational spending. The changes precede the November 4th budget, Carney's first, and follow warnings from the Independent Parliamentary Budget Officer about the growing federal deficit and debt, and questions about the sustainability of the federal government's finances. Officials from the Federal Finance Department, who briefed journalists on the budget changes Monday morning, said the switch from spring to fall will help align the timing of the plan with the release of estimated annual federal spending, known as main estimates, that is in quotes, that gets tabled each year in the parliament. The officials also said the move will come before the traditional construction season, in quotes again, in the spring of each year, helping the private sector and other levels of government plan based on federal spending decisions. The fiscal update that traditionally gets released each fall will now take place in the spring, the official said. Beyond that, the officials outlined some of the changes Carney, the former governor of both the Bank of Canada and the Bank of England, promised to bring to federal budgeting during this year's federal election. Carney, at the time, promised to show a split between operational and capital spending and to balance the federal government's operational budget of day-to-day spending over the next 3 years. Officials refused repeatedly Monday to specify how much money the government considers in each category. It also remains unclear how much, or even which, sources of revenue will be used to consider how to balance operational spending. Instead, they told reporters that operational spending will generally include health and social transfers, as well as the cost of running government. The capital spending side will consist of spending such as transfers to other governments meant for infrastructure, tax credits meant to spur economic growth, and measures to grow housing, officials said. This new lens, in quotes, for the federal budget is meant to show a different angle on the federal government spending and won't replace the traditional ledger included with budgets that show the overall deficit, the officials said. On that score, the Carney government has taken heat from the opposition conservatives. the party seized upon the Parliamentary Budget Officer's recent report that the annual federal deficit is set to increase from $51.7 billion in 2024 to 2025 to $68.5 billion this fiscal year. While the debt to GDP ratio, which the Liberals previously promised to keep on a declining track, is forecast to increase over the medium term. Part of the projected deficit increase is from more than $8.3 billion in a new spending on national defense that Carney announced for the current fiscal year, as well as lost revenues from the government's income tax and significantly lower revenues from Canada's counter-tariffs, which Carney has decreased on American imports that the Liberals forecast in their election platform. At the same time, the Liberals are pursuing a review of spending with a goal of reducing expenses across much of the federal government by almost $25 billion over the next 3 years. Experts like then Parliamentary Budget Officer Yais Giroux, and it's G-I-R-O-U-X, have said that the scale of the reductions will likely require job losses in the civil service, as well as cuts to federal contributions to outside organizations. This article was written by Alex Ballinghall. It says Alex Ballinghall is the deputy Ottawa chief for the Star. Email him at ABALLINGALL. thestar.ca. This article is titled, "People Are Done with Yesterday's Leaders." Here's why Councillor Brad Bradford, B-R-A-D-B-R-A-D-F-O-R-D, wants to be Toronto's next mayor. Bradford, 39, is the first to publicly declare a run for the council's top job in the October 2026 municipal election, promising to deliver, in quotes, generational change to City Hall. And then there's a picture of Mr. Bradford, and in quotes, he states, "I think the folks who have been the authors of many of the problems that we're facing now are not the ones who are going to fix it," says Brad Bradford, whose priorities in his campaign for next October's mayoral race will be public safety, affordability, and Toronto's traffic and transportation problems. And the photo is by Nick LaChance, Toronto Star. This article is written by Ben Spurr, S-P-U-R-R, City Hall Bureau Chief. Brad Bradford says it's time to turn the page on, in quotes, yesterday's leaders, framing the upcoming Toronto mayoral race as a contest between old political guard and the younger generation, one he says he can represent. The second-term councillor for Beaches-East York and eighth-place finisher in the 2023 mayoral by-election confirmed this week he plans to run again for the council's top job. With nominations for the October 26, 2026 vote not officially open until May 1st, he's the first, hopefully, to publicly proclaim his candidacy. His announcement on Wednesday came as no surprise to anyone familiar with his persistent, headline-grabbing criticism of Mayor Olivia Chow's progressive administration over the past 2 years. Now that he's the first candidate out of the gate, Bradford is hoping to define the contest by promising, in quotes, generational change, After what he described as more of a decade of drift, in quotes, that has rendered the city less livable. He noted that when the Star recently asked residents to grade the city, they gave it a middling to low marks on issues like transit, traffic congestion, and housing affordability. 4 in 10 respondents said they were considering leaving Toronto in the next 5 years, most of them citing the high cost of living. "I think people are done with yesterday's leaders," that's in quotes, he said in an interview the morning after his announcement, seated at the dining room table of his East York home. In quotes, "I think the folks who have been the authors of many of the problems that we're facing right now are not the ones who are going to fix it." That barb appeared aimed not only at Chow, 68, but her predecessor, John Tory. As the Star has previously reported, the 71-year-old former center-right mayor is considering contesting the next election. That Bradford, 39, hopes to position himself as a more youthful alternative was reflected in the medium he chose to announce his mayoral bid. Instead of a traditional press conference or news release, the councillor confirmed his intentions in an interview on the, in quotes, Brandon Gonez Show, G-O-N-E-Z, a weekly online talk show broadcast on YouTube, in quotes. "As a millennial candidate, as someone who would be the city's first millennial mayor, I want to make sure I'm reaching out and engaging in platforms where my peers are," Bradford explained to the Star. The councillor lost a podcast of his own last month. Although Chow has not yet publicly stated she plans to run for re-election, she is expected to, and Bradford's desire to challenge her for the mayor royalty has long been among the worst-kept secrets at City Hall. Soon after the mayor took office in July 2023, he set himself up as the unofficial leader of the opposition, criticizing her on everything from property tax increases to housing policy and the city's response to anti-Semitism, and for months has been holding campaign-style events at locations far outside of his ward. Bradford said he's doing the important work of holding the administration to account, although some of his council colleagues have accused him of grandstanding. As an urban planner by training, Bradford describes himself as a centrist and has been courting liberal and conservative insiders to back his mayoral bid. He said his campaign priorities would be public safety, affordability, and Toronto's notorious traffic and transportation problems. The councillor has said property taxes increases aren't the best way to improve services, and instead he would, in quotes, foster a culture of fiscal discipline. He told the Star that the local government has been spread too thin and, in quotes, can't be all things to all people, but didn't provide details of what, if any, programs he might eliminate. To be successful next year, Bradford will to have massively improve on his performance 2 years ago when he received just 1.3% of the vote in the by-election called to replace Tory, who resigned in February 2023 after the Star revealed he'd had a relationship with a staffer. Asked what he thinks will be different this time around, Bradford said he, in quotes, learned a lot from his loss. And while he said he has spent, in quotes, a tremendous amount of time listening to Torontoans and will, in quotes, take my cues from them, he didn't say whether the message of his upcoming campaign would be markedly different from his losing effort in 2023. With more than a year to go until voting day, the Star has heard that some beaches dash East York residents who expressed concern Bradford will be too focused on his mayoral bid to address their local concerns. Bradford says he has no intention of abandoning his constituents, however. Until the campaign period officially starts, candidates aren't allowed to raise or spend money. Bradford says he's abiding by this rule. Ben Spur is the STARS City Hall Bureau Chief based in Toronto. Reach him by email at bsprrr@thestar.ca. Pivotal talks between Israel and Hamas begin in Egypt on the eve of the Gaza War anniversary. The indirect negotiations will take place in the Red Sea resort of Sharm el-Sheikh, S-H-E-I-K-N, where the Israel delegation is set to arrive on Monday. And then there's a picture with smoke rising, dark clouds, and it says smoke rises to the sky following an Israel military strike in the northern Gaza Strip, as seen from southern Israel, Monday, October 6, 2025. And this article, and that photo was taken by Leah Correa, C-O-R-R-E-A, of the Associated Press. This article is written by Sammy Magdy, M-A-G-D-Y, Melanie Lidman, L-I-D-M-A-N, and Wafa Shurafa, S-H-U-R-A-F-A, the Associated Press. And it says in Cairo, Israel and Hamas officials launched indirect talks Monday at an Egyptian resort on a U.S.-drafted peace plan to ensure the ruinous war in Gaza on the eve of its second anniversary. Many uncertainties remain about the plan presented by U.S. President Donald Trump last week, including the disarmament of the militant group, a key Israel demand, and the future government of Gaza. Trump has indicated an agreement on Gaza could pave the way for a Middle East peace process that could reshape the region. Despite Trump ordering Israel to stop bombing, Israel continued to pound Gaza with airstrikes, killing at least 19 people in the last 24 hours, the territory's health ministry said. An Egyptian official said talks began at the Red Sea resort of Sharm el-Sheikh, S-H-E-I-K-H, Monday afternoon. The official spoke on the condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to speak publicly about the talks. The Israelis are led by top negotiator Ron Dermer, while Kaila, K-H-A-L-I-L, and then A-L-H-A-Y-Y-A-H, Haya, leads the Hamas delegation. Hamas said negotiations will focus on the first stage of a ceasefire, including the partial withdrawal of Israel forces, as well as the release of hostages held by militants in Gaza in exchange for Palestine prisoners in Israeli detention. U.S. Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff and President Donald Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner are also expected to join the talks. Egypt state-run Al-Ram, A-H-R-A-M, reported. This latest push for peace comes after Hamas accepted some elements of the U.S. plan that Israel also said it supported. Under the plan, Hamas will release the remaining 48 hostages, about 20 believed to be alive, within 3 days. It would give up power and disarm. The talks in Egypt are expected to move quickly. Netanyahu said that they would be, in quotes, confined to a few days maximum, though some Hamas officials have warned more time may be needed to locate bodies of hostages buried under rubble. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, and I will spell that, Abdel-Fattah, and then new word, el-Sisi, hailed Trump's efforts. In quotes, a ceasefire, the return of hostages and detainees, the reconstruction of Gaza, and the start of a peaceful political process leading to establishment and recognition of a Palestine state mean that we are on the right path towards lasting peace and solid stability, he said. He underscored the importance of preserving the U.S.-crafted, in quotes, peace system in the Middle East since the 1970s, which he said, in quotes, served a strategic framework for regional stabilities. El-Sisi spoke in a televised address commemorating the anniversary of October 6, 1973 war with Israel that led to Egypt reclaiming the Sinai Peninsula, where Sharm el-Sheikh is located. U.S. wants Israeli's bombing to stop. The U.S. has said Israel's heavy bombardment of Gaza would need to stop for the hostages to be released. Israel says it's largely heeding Trump's call. Israel's military said it's mostly carrying out defensive strikes to protect troops, though dozens of Palestinians have been killed since a military statement Saturday night. Gaza's health ministry said Monday the bodies of 19 people, including two aid seekers killed by Israel strikes and gunfire, have been brought to hospitals over the past 24 hours. Another 96 were wounded. The deaths brought the Palestine toll to 67,160 people since a Hamas attack on October 7, 2023, triggered the war with nearly $170,000 people wounded, the ministry said. The ministry does not differentiate between civilians and combatants, but says more than half of the deaths were women and children. The ministry is part of the Hamas-run government, and the UN and many independent experts consider its figures to be the most reliable estimate of wartime casualties. Hamas-led militants abducted 251 people and killed around 1,200, mostly civilians, in the October 7th attack. Most of the largely Israel hostages have been released in ceasefires or other deals. Meanwhile, families of Israel hostages petitioned the Nobel Prize Committee to award the Nobel Peace Prize to Trump for what they called his unprecedented contributions to global peace. In quotes, at this very moment, President Trump's comprehensive plan to release all remaining hostages and finally end this terrible war is on the table, the families wrote. In quotes, for the first time in months, we are hopeful our nightmare will finally be over. In a commemoration ceremony for Israelis killed at the NIR, N-I-R, Oz, O-Z, Kibbutz, K-I-B-B-U-T-Z on October 7th, Daniel Lefschitz, L-I-F-S-H-I-T-Z, said the primary focus of talks should be on the swift release of all remaining hostages. In quotes, Israel will pay painful concessions by releasing mass murderers and terrorists that killed many among our friends and families here in Israel, but we cherish life, and in Trump, we trust to make it happen. In that, we will have good news in 24 to 36 hours, said Lishas, grandson of slain hostage Oded, O-D-E-D, and released hostage Yoshiva Lifshitz, and that's Yochevedlifshitz. And I apologize for any mispronunciations. Quotes, living in fear, war, and displacement. In Gaza, families of Palestine babies born on the day of war began hope to celebrate their second birthday to the sound of laughter and cheers instead of a canopy of bombing and bullets. Mother's hope for a normal life has long worn thin among repeated displacements, a constant fear for their safety, and a lack of access to proper health care. Rola Saquer, S-A-Q-E-R, said that the 2 years since giving birth to daughter Mesa have been full of suffering. I was hoping Mesa would grow up with a strong personality, but she is weak. She has suffered malnutrition. The girl has weight 8 kilos, 17 pounds for 5 months now, in quote, she states. Laundry, a plastic chair, and a carpet make up the bulk of the family's possessions in their tent in a Nusref, EIRAT refugee camp. Amal al-Twil, AmalAl-TawelL, and her husband Mustafa, Mostafa, and their son Ali, after 3 years of trying for a child. Had their son Ali after 3 years of trying for a child. They now live in a tent without proper sanitation, food, vaccinations, or even toys. I was envisioning a different life for him. He couldn't experience what a safe family feels like, Al-Twil said. That was in quotes. Lindman reported from Tel Aviv, Israel, and Shurafa, Shurafa, from Deir, D-E-I-R, then Al-Balah, Gaza Strip. Ontario Trillium Benefit and Canada Workers Benefit land this week. Here's what you need to know. Both payments are automatic for eligible Ontarians, but you want to make sure you're set up for a direct deposit. And there's a picture of some Canadian coins or the Canadian dollar, and it says single individuals can receive up to $1,590 from the Advanced Canada Workers Benefit. And this article is by Dasha Lopi, D-A-Y-S-H-A-L-O-P-P-I-E, staff reporter. Pockets feeling a little light. Two benefits are set to be distributed to eligible Ontarians next week. The Ontario Trillium Benefit and the Advanced Canada Workers Benefit. Both payments will be made on October 10th. Amid the Canada Post labor disruption, be sure you have signed up for direct deposit to receive your payments, if eligible, without delay. Here's what you should know about the money that could be coming your way. Ontario Trillium Benefit. What is it? The Ontario Trillium Benefit, OTB, combines three credits: the Northern Ontario Energy Credit, the Ontario Energy and Tax Credit, and the Ontario Sales Tax Credit to help offset energy, sales, and property tax expenses. Who is eligible? You must qualify for at least one of these credits. Once you file and fill your person income tax and benefit return, including the Ontario Benefit Application Form, the Canada Review Agency will determine if you're eligible to receive the benefit based on the information you provided. For youth facing unemployment and rising living costs, file before the April 30th tax deadline if you turn 18 before the June 2026 to see if you qualify. How much can I receive? Use the Child and Family Benefit Calculator. For taxpayers who receive more than $360, you have an option about how your payment is delivered, either monthly starting July 2025 or as a single lump sum in June 2026. How do I apply? There is no need to apply. Eligibility and amounts will be determined automatically after filing your tax return. When can I expect the benefit? The next payment is on October 10th, and the remaining OTB payment dates for 2025 are November 10th and December 10th. Advanced Canada Workers Benefit, what is it? The Advanced Canada Workers Benefit, ACWB, is another payment for low-income individuals and families to help with the rising cost of living, which has two parts, a basic amount and a disability supplement. You can claim this benefit when you file your taxes and can receive advance payments of up to 50% of the amount. Who is eligible? There are a few eligibility requirements. You should have a net income below the set net income level of the province in which you live. In Ontario, for a family with children, that amount is $48,093. For an individual without children, the amount is $36,749. You must also be a Canadian resident throughout the year and 19 years or older before December 31st, or have a spouse, common-in-law, partner, or child. For Ontario residents, the net income limit is $48,093 for families with children and $36,749 for individuals without children. How much can I receive? Use the Child and Family Benefit Calculator to estimate how much you receive. How do I apply? Like the OTB, there's no application. Your eligibility will be automatically determined by the CRA based on the information you provide on your tax return. When can I expect the payment? The next payment date is October 10, 2025. Disability Supplement. Looking to claim the Disability Supplement? You must have an income below the net income for the province you're living in. For Ontario, if you're single, without children, that amount is $42,221. You must also have an approved T2-201/disability tax credit certificate on file with the CRA. If you have a spouse or common law partner and only one of you is eligible for the supplement, the person who is eligible should claim both the basic amount and the supplement. If you're both eligible for the supplement, only one person can claim the basic amount. And Dasha Lopi is a staff reporter with the Toronto Star. She can be reached at dloppie@signaldorstar.ca. This article is titled Opinion: How Toronto Can Take a Lesson from Van Halen and Learn to Sweat the Small Stuff. And there's a picture of a bicycle, a Toronto cargo bike in Allen Gardens, used by an employee doing gardening work in May of 2023. And this article is by Sean McAuliffe, M-I-C-A-L-L-E-F, contributing columnist. And he's a Toronto-based writer and a freelance contributing columnist for The Star. As rock and roll lore goes, Van Halen requesting that a bowl of M&Ms in their dressing room have absolutely no brown ones is legendary. Celebrity excess, perhaps, but also a lesson to sweat the small stuff sometimes. While there's a debate around the reason, frontman David Lee Roth said it was a test. When Van Halen rolled into town with a complex stage show filled of high voltage, heavy items, and their contract stipulated technical specifications along with the M&M demand, if the brown ones were present, it was a sign of sloppiness and reason to check every other detail, some of which could be calamitous, C-A-L-A-M-I-T-O-U-S, if overlooked. I thought of those brown M&Ms while reading the response to Toronto Parks and Recreation recently sent to City Council, answering a request to look into the practice of driving trucks and large vehicles in city parks. Anyone who travels in this city knows large vehicles are routinely in the parks, sometimes contractors, other times the city itself cleaning washrooms or trimming shrubs, often with a supersized crew cab pickup truck worthy of the Alberta tar sands. Landscaping that costs Torontoans substantial money to create and maintain is destroyed or damaged by the city itself. There's also less immediate visible damage to the city infrastructure and tree routes. It's disrespectful to Torontonians, a scandalous waste of money, but there's also a human angle. Parks are essential as water and electricity for urban life, the yards for hundreds of thousands of apartment dwellers, all who have to contend daily with massive vehicles as they try to enjoy their parks. But how else can we do it? In quotes, is an excuse. Traveling to other cities reveals it's possible to maintain parks to far higher standards than Toronto does and not see a giant pickup truck. I've seen exquisite parks in Madrid, Lisbon, Hong Kong, Mexico City, and elsewhere maintained without such large vehicles. Trash bins are emptied with handcarts. Even in Toronto, I've come across a city employee pruning bushes and Allen Gardens using a small cargo bike. It's imminently possible to do things differently, but there needs to be a desire to change. Toronto Parks Department behavior suggests there isn't much desire. City Council's request for, in quotes, updated guidance on using vehicles in the parks was essential by a wide-ranging question about all vehicles with the expectation of honest self-evaluation and suggestions of better ways to do things. It's not telling that the response back only addressed, quotes, solid waste trucks. They didn't answer the whole question, and councilors and the mayor should be asking why. The rest of the response is essentially a shrug, suggesting they can't help but drive in the grass because of a variety of reasons, such as avoiding cyclists and pedestrians, and the damage is really not such a big deal. This is a clear case of things we can see with our eyes are not being reflected in an official city report. While there are surely exceptional and reasonable times a large truck is needed, the standard way Toronto's parks and recreations have operated is a repeated self-inflicted wound on the city. Any public official who believes in public service and the public realm should be angry about this because it undermines other arguments for expanding and better funding parks and public projects. It also undermines the good work other city employees do every day. People see it and think, in quote, nobody values this, nobody cares, so why should I? Barely a critical peep from council or mayor. In the scheme of the vast city of Toronto, with its over $18 billion operating budget and pressing problems, this might seem like a small thing, but it's as important as brown M&Ms. High profile, invisible, it's an indicator of how other things might work behind the scenes. This is an example that the city is currently undertaking a, quote, tree maintenance review of its urban forestry practices. There have been some tragedies with falling limbs, killing people in the parks, and it's easy to find a butchered municipal tree in nearly every block or park of the city. The mayor and city council should be watching that audit closely and critically. Toronto just hired a new general manager of Parks and Recreation, rather than quietly after the truck response was sent. The previous head came and went quickly and rather curiously. It's an election year and the Mayor Chow should be intimately and publicly involved in all of this, demanding substantial changes in how Toronto maintains its public spaces. Parks reform that should be a major part of her re-election platform, empowering the new park heads to make, force if necessary, fundamental department changes. So Torontonians, this really matters. If she doesn't, she's handling her mayoral rivals in a compelling platform. It's time to sweat the small stuff because it's actually a big deal. Thank you so much as you've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the Toronto Star edition of October 6, 2025. Your reader has been Judy, and it has been a pleasure to read to you. Thank you so much for listening and have an amazing day.